Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step 3, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello everyone and welcome to the Slash Filmcast. I'm David Chen and joining me today are...
Devendra Hardwar.
Jeff Cannata.
And joining us also, he is the creator and, I guess, mastermind behind the Patrick H. Willems YouTube channel. Patrick H. Willems.
I would hope he is.
Well, yeah, hopefully. Patrick H. Willems, welcome back to the podcast.
That's the best intro.
He's just a puppet. He's a puppet for someone else is what it is.
Yeah, you're a figurehead.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I can't reveal who's really behind the show.
Soldier for hire using you in virtual reality, Patrick. I get it.
Yeah, that's totally it. I'm controlled by, it's nanomachines. It's all nanomachines.
Well, Patrick, we're really grateful for you joining us today here on this episode of the Slash Filmcast. You can find more episodes of the show at slashfilmcast.com. Email us at slashfilmcast@gmail.com. And today we're going to be discussing Bloodshot, the new Vin Diesel action star vehicle, a would-be cinematic universe that unfortunately looks like it is not to be. So that's what's in store for today. Before we do that, though, we like to have kind of a little before dark. We used to do a Slash Filmcast after dark where we talk about a variety of random topics. But people said, hey, we want to hear about some of those things before the review. So we are going to talk about a few topics right here at the top. The first thing I want to discuss is the fact that several weeks ago on this podcast, we started changing up the format a little bit, and now we're changing up the format again because we're all just trying to adapt to a rapidly changing cinematic environment. And I went on this podcast and discussed at length how amazing
the
audio quality was going to be, because now we had a little bit of extra time to put these episodes together. And so rather than recording everything over Skype, we now record our audio stream separately and combine them. And it was going to lead to a beautiful world of audio. And I literally spent, I would say, a good 5 minutes talking about how good the audio was.
Yeah.
And while this was happening, Jeff's audio was a disaster.
Way worse than normal.
Way worse than normal. Way worse than even normal Skype. And I caught this pretty quickly, you know, like it went online and I caught it and then we changed it, but not before it went out to about 5,000 listeners who received the special limited edition version of that episode of the podcast.
Broken version.
I mean, it's literally like Michael Scott-esque performance art.
The resale value on that episode is going to be phenomenal.
It's through the roof. Keep it in mid-condition. Two things, David. Two things. Firstly, no idea how that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, it delights me that it happened because it makes you sound so ridiculous as you're talking.
Yeah.
That's the bit. That's the bit, right?
That's the bit.
That's the bit. Yeah.
5,000 people have their ears bleed is a small price to pay sometimes for a sick burn on Dave Chan.
I actually think that a lot of people were really nice about it. You know, like I would have not even listened to the second I heard Jeff start clipping in the first 5 seconds of the podcast, I'd have been like, I'm not listening to this. But a lot of people were like, huh, they would tweet in kind of quizzically saying, hey, I noticed Jeff's like a little bit loud this episode. You know, rather than saying, that is god awful. I can't believe you guys released that.
Funny thing is, the waveforms all looked completely normal to me, as they do right now. So we could be doing this again all I know.
In any case, many of you thought that episode was rough. We actually went back and replaced it with a more listenable version of the episode. So, and thanks to Beatty for acting quickly on that. So just want to say, if you got a bad copy of it, go back, re-download that episode. I think it was episode 559, I want to say, maybe 558. But yeah, check it out again. It has been replaced and the audio is better now.
But David, could you hook me up with like the original cut?
Yes, I have no problem with that. I have no problem.
Release
with that.
The crappy cut.
Oh, you know, we should. That's something else we should talk about. Actually, you guys have heard of this thing about the butthole cut of Cats, right?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I think we gotta mention this a little bit. So
we do. Okay.
Half of the people on this show, on this podcast right now, have seen the cinematic wonder that is the theatrical version of Cats that came out this past year. That's actually now available on video on demand, right?
That's what we could review
only
next
half?
Week.
What'd you say, Jeff?
That's what we only could review next week.
We could, yeah. But yes, only half
of us. How
dare
you, Jeff? How dare you?
So this all started with Ben Meckler. A few days ago, who tweeted the following. He said, I desperately need a tell-all book about the making of Cats. It could really help me get through this, end quote. He tweeted that on March 17th. And at that point, a user named Jack Waz said, quote, a VFX producer friend of a friend was hired in November to finish some of the 400 effect shots in Cats the movie. His entire job was to remove CGI buttholes that had been inserted a few months before, which means that somewhere out there exists a butthole cut of Cats, end quote. and then Ben retweeted this. It went pretty viral to the point that like Rian Johnson, Seth Rogen... we're calling for Universal to release the butthole cut of Cats. What is amazing about this, actually, I think what's great about this is I do think it illustrates a fundamental truth, which is that this whole idea of like releasing the Snyder cut, right? You know, this is a thing that's we've seen on the internet for months and months now. Of people wanting the original cut of Justice League that never came out because Zack Snyder was replaced by Joss Whedon. And I think in a lot of people's mind, there exists this Snyder cut that's just sitting on a shelf somewhere. You just got to pop it in to the uploader and get it onto video on demand services. But that is not how these things work. You know, there is no such thing as a Snyder cut, at least not right now. I mean, he has said there is, but... it's not like the VFX are finished. It's not like the edits are finished, right?
There is.
Isn't it like 4 hours long too? Because it's like a work.
Yeah, I mean, there's this idea of this thing called like I believe it's called an assembly cut. Patrick, keep me honest here, but it's an assembly cut, which is like part of the workflow of completing a film. But it's not a cut that's that you want like a polished finished product that you'd want to show to audiences. And so the reason...
Right, yeah, of course not.
The reason I love this release the butthole cut thing that sprung up, this hashtag that went trending on Twitter for a day, is that it reveals the fallacy of the idea that there is a Snyder cut, or any cut of a film that people are demanding the release of. Patrick, your thoughts on this whole butthole cut movement?
So I followed that really closely.
Yes.
As someone who's been... just fascinated by everything about Cats since the movie was announced.
Fascinated by buttholes.
hey, Jeff, don't put words in my mouth.
Don't put buttholes in your mouth?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But apparently, you might have seen there was like a development after that where I think someone else who worked on the movie then chimed in to say like it wasn't that there were buttholes. It's that some of the shading or like the rendering of the fur around their crotches looked disturbingly like genitalia. Mm. and that someone and that they actually had to, but they, people were afraid to bring it up during like the VFX review sessions with Tom Hooper. And someone eventually did have to go through and like erase all of those because it just looked really weird and unsettling.
Yeah. So we should point out that it wasn't like people were inserting buttholes into this thing, right? That apparently
right. It just
there, there
like
was a cut where it looked like there were buttholes and other genitalia.
Yeah, yeah.
This is really important, you know, discussion update.
I really wanted to make sure this was on the record.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I would like to point out, Dave, that your setting up of this as a referendum on the Snyder Cut isn't quite accurate, because I think you're rightly pointing out that whatever Snyder Cut there may or may not be exists in a state that is pre-post-production.
Yes, that's probably unreleasable at this point, right?
Well, it's probably would need a lot of work to be considered a finished movie.
Yes.
Whereas this seems like something that was in the post-production process and needed to be corrected before the film was released. So theoretically, there may be versions of these shots on a hard drive somewhere that still retain the original butthole shading and could theoretically be part of a movie that looks way more finished than what a Snyder Cut would. I don't think it's apples to apples here.
I think that's true.
Buttholes to buttholes.
You know what I agree with you. I think you're right. It's not quite a perfect analogy. But I would say, like, we don't know at what stage of post-production those buttholes were. You know what I mean? Like, it's possible that...
Well, they're CG shots, right? The buttholes only exist as CG, right? They didn't have butthole costumes. These are not practical buttholes, right?
No, I think they might be.
Fully
actually.
Digital buttholes,
well,
aren't they?
Well, the thing is, so I'm not sure about the production of this movie, but a lot of studios are using machine learning to kind of iron out the animation kinks, right? And when you're putting like mocap on people, that's kind of what is doing it. So in reality, what has happened is that the AI has put the buttholes there. The AI wants the buttholes.
So this is a tweet.
We need to figure this out.
This is a tweet made on March 18th by Ben Meckler. He says, urgent release the butthole cut update/clarification. Emailed to me by a Cats visual effects crew member who has asked to remain anonymous. He says, quote, there were never shots of cats with buttholes, at least by design, none that I saw. However, there were a dozen or so shots where the skin and fur simulation was groomed or just folded in a way that really, really looked like furry lady genitals and buttholes by accident. The task, as is typical with heavy CG shows, fell on 2D to paint out the offending articles when it was brought up and spotted. Daily reviews were constantly awkward discussions of people plucking up the courage to point things out like, does this look like a fanny to you? End quote. So
all I'm saying, come on,
someone somewhere is clenching these buttholes and not releasing them to the public. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I guess my point being,
someone could leak that out.
You don't want to leak the buttholes.
My point being that I think it sounds like it was actually a practical effect. You know, like that because they did.
I don't think that's accurate. Did wear costumes?
They were like minor costumes, and then like stuff was
overlaid stuff
on
was
top
CG.
Of them. That much I know.
Yeah. Jeff, your knowledge of the making of Cats is staggeringly bad. I have to say.
I heard the quote you just read, and the way I heard it was that the way the things were rendered in a CG shot, in a visual effects shot, looked like buttholes and front butts.
There is an AI algorithm out there creating buttholes.
You know what?
Movies.
You know what?
We need to stop this.
I think you might be right about that. So suffice to say, this thing is like an onion. You know, the more you peel back, the deeper you go, the more it stinks. And I think that we may never get to the bottom of this thing. You know,
we never get to the bottom of these bottoms.
We may never get to the bottom of these bottoms. But hey, hopefully, if you caught that. By the way, that happened 1 week ago, even though it feels like a year ago, when we were talking about cat buttholes online. Anyway.
Do you remember when we could care about that stuff?
I think we just proved we still can, Jeffrey. We still can. All right. Anything else? I kind of want to check in with you. Patrick, you are marooned at your parents' house right now. Is that right?
I am, yeah. I came up here for what was supposed to be a 3-day trip. 2 weeks later, still here.
Man.
I've got to say, it's going pretty well, though. This house is, it has a lot more space than my, you know, New York City apartment.
You lucked out, Patrick. Like, you're in the best possible position right now. Yeah.
It's true. I already worked from home, so I can still work. And I'm just like, I'm out in the woods.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh, I'm social distancing so well right now because there is not, I have not seen a person other than my parents in like 2 weeks.
Yeah, but I just don't know if I could live with my parents indefinitely, you know?
That's the thing. I have cool parents that I get along with really well.
I get along with mine too, but living with them.
Yeah.
Oof.
I don't know what to tell you.
I'm glad for you.
Far.
I'm glad for you. Yeah, that's good news.
You've basically just not wanted to like subject yourself and others to the risk of you traveling. That's why you're not going back home right now, right?
It just doesn't make sense. I mean, like you watch the news and so much of it is just about New York City. And like, why would I go back there right now?
Yeah.
Like Devendra is there.
It's a hellscape. It's not great.
Take a good look at what Devendra's life is right now. No one wants that.
I'm just trapped in an apartment with a toddler who's getting increasingly self-aware and more like more attitude. So, I'm just dealing with this internal crisis. But it is insane that the occasions when I run out to the grocery store to get supplies or something, it's like once or twice a week. But so many people are just not doing anything. No one is protecting themselves. And it is terrifying. It is like, it's all the post-apocalyptic movies we've watched and all the things we've read, and people are just like blasé going about their lives as normal through this. It's infuriating. It's crazy.
Jeff Cannata, what's it been like in Los Angeles being cooped up with your two kids?
Oh, not great. it's stressful, and it does seem crazy to me that it has only been such a short time and there seems to be such a long runway ahead of us before any even remote chance of normalcy returns. I can't believe it's only been about a real week of doing this in any, you know, concentrated way.
Yeah.
It is.
We should crazy. Point out that we are recording this on Friday, March 27th. You will hear this a few days after that. So it's possible like more things will have changed by the time.
It's almost certain.
Yeah.
It's weird. There, who knows what world you're living this in or listening to this in. I mean, every day is a new raft of horrors. So
I was looking over our show notes. We were supposed to review Mulan this week. Remember?
Wouldn't that have been nice?
Remember when Mulan was going to be a movie that came out in theaters? Remember when theaters were a thing that were open?
I was like, I don't need to go to the premiere. I'll just see it the following week.
Yeah.
And now, you know, the people that went to the premiere may be the only people that ever see that movie in a theater.
Well, also, they all have the virus now, so.
Well, that's true.
Gone. Yeah.
I don't know if I joke about that, but suffice to say, I think that. It is. It does feel like that life was forever ago, even though it's only been a couple weeks. So
I want to comment too about how Devendra just phrased that, because my wife said something similar to me last night, and she said, you know, something the virus, and I was like, we're in the fucking movie.
It's actually the Rona. It's the Rona.
You talk about the virus and how. The virus is in our. That's the thing. It's the movie, man. It's crazy.
It seems like you've brought this up a few times. You seem to really be into the fact or into this idea that we are in like act one of a post-apocalypse movie, basically.
I don't think into it is how I would describe it. It is an unignorable sensation that I. That hits me in waves.
Fair enough. Jeff is just speaking the truth. That's all.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's the Walking Dead or Last Man on Earth, you know, all
the
these.
Last of Us, yeah.
Yeah. Last Man on Earth is a comedy, right? So I kind of feel almost like it's more like that sometimes, just the day-to-day of being in my house. And Last Man on Earth, they would talk about the virus and, you know, they would be doing ridiculous things. And that's kind of how it feels right now. It's almost a parody of itself in a strange way, and how I'll walk out. I mean, I went to Trader Joe's yesterday, which was the first time I've gone in a week. The first
time
I went.
Full hazmat gear, I assume, Jeff.
I did not, although my wife scolds me for that. But it was, I mean, I'm playing Half-Life Alyx right now, too. And so it's, that game is all built around City 17, which is this you know, basically dystopian nightmare. And
there is a quarantine zone in that game.
Yes.
So it is, yeah, quite the thing to be playing right now.
And I mean, I'm first of all, waiting to get into Trader Joe's in a line of people who all have masks and gloves on, looking like, you know, this dystopian future already. Then we get shuffled in groups. And as we're in there, there's like a recording over the loudspeaker that's done in this very pleasant voice of like, don't forget to cover your mouth with your elbow if you sneeze, which is so Half-Life. It's crazy. And
yeah.
Then you go to check out. And by the way, everybody's like veering away from each other, which is good. It's what you're supposed to do, but it feels weird to look at a stranger and try not to get close to them. And then when you check out, the checker says, please stand in the green box until I beckon you to move forward. It is like, it is those movies. It is those video games. It's that nutso sensation of, I've experienced this through fiction. And I know I've been saying that for the past several weeks, but it just gets more acute every time, every week, every day. It's just more and more descending into the deeper first act of those movies.
The sad thing, though, Jeff, is that none of the fiction we've seen or read has been as dumb as reality.
Well,
I think that's what's really depressing me right now. So
there's
that. Good. Stay safe, everybody. Good luck.
Patrick Willems, I notice you've been consuming a lot of media as you've been quarantined. And I'm curious, like, what has guided your media consumption this last week?
So I will say it. I'm not going to say that the timing of this pandemic was good, because that's
because that would
not
be a terrible
true.
Thing to say. That would be a terrible thing to say. Yeah.
Yes, that would be exactly. It could never be good. But I had already, like, months ahead of time, scheduled a little break, just like some time to like relax and recharge and not work for like a week or so in late March. And so this just hit when I was already going to take time off. And so I've just spent the week just watching 2 to 3 movies every single day. And I've just been trying to, I have like a long list in a Google Doc that's like, I don't know, some 12 pages long that just has, it's like a queue, of movies that I have not seen that I intend to see. And I've just been trying to just go through that and just fill in gaps in like my movie viewing, and trying to like make choices quickly, just go through like directors' filmographies in terms of like who, like, watch their movies that I haven't seen, watch classics that I'm ashamed that I haven't seen before. And that just, it seems like I've been in the mood for a lot of like 1980s, action movies and thrillers.
Yeah, so
like right now I'm just
Hit us with some highlights.
Like, okay, so I'm going to admit something really embarrassing right now. until 2 days ago, I'd never seen the film Predator.
Wow. Oh, wow. My opinion of you, Patrick, has now, gone much lower.
This is why I was embarrassed to admit
it. How did you feel about it?
Yeah.
I think it's a goddamn masterpiece.
Yes.
like genuinely a really, really good movie. I was trying to like watch the McTiernan movies I hadn't seen. His first movie, by the way, is weird if you haven't seen it. But right now I'm just committed to watching every Tony Scott film that I haven't seen.
I saw
seen.
That. You know, this is an interesting coincidence. I've been doing these broadcasts on Periscope and Twitter every night with my wife just to check in on people. And the other night I made an analogy with something that had happened in the movie Crimson Tide, which is directed by Tony Scott. You know,
David, I literally finished watching Crimson Tide 20 minutes before.
For the first time?
Last night, nice. I watched, I put Crimson Tide on because I brought it up. There's a scene in the movie, and we're
going to
spoil Crimson Tide, which is like a 2-decade-old movie. But there's a scene in the movie where Gene Hackman, he initiates a nuclear launch test while there's a fire in the submarine. And that scene always stuck with me because he's like, we can't just like launch drills when everything's calm and hunky-dory, I think is the word he uses. And I always just really appreciated that mentality of like, you can't just test yourself when things are going super well. And so then I brought that up and I'm like, you know, I should really go revisit that movie. And first of all, that movie still kicks ass. And secondly, I am still old enough to remember when the final words of that film, as you see on the screen, something along the lines of, as of right now, the president of the United States is the only person who can launch nuclear missiles, were meant to be reassuring to viewers, which I don't feel like it is right now. But Patrick, what do you think of Crimson Tide?
Okay, also a masterpiece. I think it's like, again, I just watched it for the first time mere minutes ago. And I think it's like a top contender for Tony Scott's best movie. Yes. I really loved it.
Yeah.
And I laughed out loud in like a kind of morbid way when those final lines came up. Because, yeah, it's like, I believe the wording is something like, the power to launch a nuclear missile no longer resides with the commanders of the submarines. It resides with the president of the United States. Like, that's like, those are the final words of text. And I mean, watching that in 2020 is so
I wish you could, explain to someone who watched it back then what our situation is today. It would
blow
their mind.
The plot for Crimson Tide 2 writes itself, basically.
I feel like you've
bring Denzel back.
I feel like you've now thrown the gauntlet down that we have to try to determine what Tony Scott's best movie is. Mm-hmm. Feels like the contenders are Top Gun, right? True Romance, Crimson Tide. I mean, Last Boy Scout's really good. Days of Thunder's pretty good. Enemy of the State's pretty good.
I mean, you've got the his crazy last 20 years.
Yeah, but I feel like it's really Beverly Hills Cop 2, Top Gun, True Ram,
Man on Fire.
Man on Fire is no
Crimson
Tide.
I look at all those movies, and it is Crimson Tide for me. You know,
Crimson Tide or True Romance. Those are the two.
I've just rewatched True Romance, and talk about a movie that does not hold up. But that's just me. There's a lot about that movie that's rough now.
What's great?
It's been like a decade since I've watched it.
What's great about Crimson Tide is you have these two amazing actors just going up against each other, right? And they're like literally rivals in the movie, trying to outsmart each other. And what's also great about the movie is they're both right, right?
Yeah. Like
you can understand both of their position and why they're doing what they're doing. So, that movie.
I will say I have three more Tony Scott movies to watch until I've seen them all.
And?
So, up next is The Fan. Mm. Has anyone seen The Fan?
Yeah, it's not great.
You're good.
Well, I'm going to watch it.
I would like to point out, by the way, that Crimson Tide came out 2 years after Judgment Night. So, probably influenced by that movie.
How dare you?
Yeah. Yeah. In that both movies have two words in the title, you know? And so it probably took it's like, hey, this two word thing is working out super well. We should keep going with that. All right. Anyway, well, glad you've been finding some solace in the films of Tony Scott, Patrick.
They're so beautiful.
But, you know what? Let's get to our review today. Before we do that, though, we got to thank our sponsor. Jeff, you want to thank our sponsor for today?
I sure do. These are. Crazy times, scary times. Financially, economically, I'm sure everybody is a little worried. And if you are carrying a credit card balance, that's probably worrisome too. And it, you know, I'm not somebody that has ever had a credit card balance my entire life. I pay off my credit cards every month, and I heartily recommend that just for peace of mind. Credit card APRs can be so ridiculously high, but our sponsor, Lightstream, is a credit card consolidation loan service, and they can help you pay off your credit card bills. Lightstream believes that people with good credit deserve a better loan experience, and that's exactly what they deliver. You can roll balances from multiple credit cards into a single monthly loan payment. You can get a low fixed interest rate and free up more money from your monthly budget and say goodbye to credit card bills and take even more control of your money. Lightstream's credit card consolidation loans have rates from just 5.95% APR with auto pay, and there's absolutely no fees, no hidden fees, which is pretty great. And just for listeners of the Slash Film cast, you can apply now and get additional interest rate discounts to save even more. You know, the funniest thing about that is that I wasn't reading that. I literally, my brain just didn't work. I was saying the Slash Film cast. I wasn't reading it. It sounds like I was reading it poorly, but I wasn't. I just couldn't say the name of our own show.
Nice.
But you can get an additional interest rate discount to save even more. The only way to get that is to go to lightstream.com/filmcast. That's lightstream.com/filmcast for an additional discount. LIGHTSTREAM.com/filmcast. FILMCAST, all one word, subject to credit approval. Rate includes 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/filmcast for more information.
We also want to thank all the people who donated to the podcast this week. A big thanks to Matt Rankin, James Rosario, and Evie Erko, who writes in, "Thank you for the brilliant podcast that has inspired me to watch more movies and kept me entertained and sane during some hard times, like the current situation being self-isolated in my house in Denmark. I hope this tiny donation helps to keep the podcast running. I'd also like to send you lots of fighting spirit and encouragement. It really moved me hearing Jeff say how the global crisis has affected him. Doesn't really matter to me what kind of content you guys review and discuss at the moment, as long as I can hear you interacting with each other like usual. Thanks so much for all your hard work and all the jokes. Warm regards, Evie." So
thank you, Evie.
Thanks to Evie for that donation. And I also just want to acknowledge that we got a very generous donation from somebody who asked to remain unnamed. And I'll just read a little bit from the message that this person sent. He said, "I've been listening to you all for years. I think you're all terrific individually, and that as great as you are, the whole is much greater than the sum of its parts." And
same with the cat's cut.
Wow.
Okay, so thank you to unnamed donor. I was gobsmacked when I saw this donation, and we are extremely appreciative of it during these very challenging times. So thanks for the donation. And
I will say, Dave, I'm sure this donor felt great after we spent 10 minutes talking about the cat's butthole cut.
Yeah.
Like, that is what they're paying for. It's great. Fantastic.
In a very literal way.
Yeah.
But
if you
want to support us here on the podcast, you can always go to paypal.me/filmcast. That's paypal.me/filmcast. All right. Let's move on to our review of Bloodshot.
And initiate sequence.
Gina, I'm home.
Memories are made of this.
What is this place?
I'm sorry to be the one to tell you this, but you got yourself killed.
At RST, we rebuild the most important assets in the U.S. military. Soldiers like yourself. You're the first who we've successfully managed to bring back. But improved, enhanced. With the technology in your veins, you have an army inside you that will not only make you stronger, it will heal you instantly.
Or it should.
Now tell me, do you remember anything?
That was from the trailer for Bloodshot, the new film by David S.F. Wilson. And it was written by Jeff Wadlow and Academy Award nominee Eric Kaiser. You guys may remember Eric Kaiser's work from Arrival, a movie that we all really enjoyed. I'm going to read the plot summary for Bloodshot here. Quote, after he and his wife are murdered, Marine Ray Garrison is resurrected by a team of scientists. Enhanced with nanotechnology, he becomes a superhuman biotech killing machine, Bloodshot. As Ray first trains with fellow super soldiers, he cannot recall anything from his former life, but when his memories flood back and he remembers the man that killed both him and his wife, he breaks out of the facility to get revenge. All that stuff happens in the first like 15 minutes, by the way.
I think you could just say the arrival of Vin Diesel movies.
It's the arrival of Vin Diesel movies. Now, Patrick Willem,
clearly.
I invited you onto this podcast because I saw you tweeting about watching this movie, and I'm like, hey, I want to get Patrick's opinion on this movie that not very many people have seen, and I know Patrick's going to have a good opinion on it. That being said, Patrick, you're quarantining with your parents. You have a universe of amazing movies you can watch. Literally hundreds of thousands of movies at your fingertips. You could just enter it into Amazon or iTunes or whatever. Get on demand, whatever you want. Got the Criterion Channel. You can stream anything from classics.
Are you trying to make me feel terrible,
David? Of those movies, why did you decide to choose Bloodshot as something that you would enjoy this week?
It is true. Instead of, watching all those Fellini films I haven't seen, I chose to spend $20 and watch Bloodshot.
Yes.
Yeah, I can never take that back.
You could have literally watched Fellini's entire catalog for $20, however much it costs to rent Criterion or subscribe to Criterion Channel for a month.
But. Right.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. You know what? I have no regrets. I do have to say, part of why I decided to watch it and spend that money to watch it is I've been thinking a lot about the state of the film industry and like movie theaters and all of that with the current situation. And the way, obviously, I'm sure you guys have spent a lot of time on this podcast talking about it, the way studios are having to change their release strategy and bumping up the digital releases of a lot of movies and stuff like that. And I probably would have seen Bloodshot in theaters because I like Vin Diesel. I'm intrigued by him, you know, starring in like the adaptation of a Valiant comic series. But I would have used my AMC A-list account to see it, basically not paying any money for it. But also right now I've been thinking about like, okay, what can we as movie fans do to sort of like send, I guess, some kind of message to the studios about the fact that like, yes, we still care about these movies and we still care about new releases. We're not going to like give up on these things. And so part of it was out of just curiosity and interest in the movie. And then part of it was also just wanting to support the film industry by saying like, yeah, if this is how, if this is the only way to see a new release,
more of this, please.
I will do it. Yeah. And so I spent $20 and I now own forever on iTunes a copy of Bloodshot.
Well, that's very beautifully said. And it is fascinating that the form your grief has taken is paying $20 for Bloodshot. So we should point out that, by the way, right, like this is adapted from a comic book series, and it was ostensibly going to become like a cinematic universe that could go up against like DC and Marvel, hopefully on the big screen.
Sure.
Jeff, I think you and Patrick both know a lot about comic books and read them somewhat regularly, is my understanding. Is like, can you give us a sense, like calibrate how big Valiant is compared to like Marvel and DC? Is it like 10% the size, 50% the size, 80% the size?
Distant third. Yeah. I mean, these are,
I wouldn't even,
not even third. Yeah, you're right. Not even third, not even remotely third. It's a distant, I mean, if you're only talking three in your subset, then yes, it's third, distant third, but it is not third out of all of these superhero pantheons. But in the early 90s when the comic book industry was booming, they put out a bunch of the Exo Manowar comes to mind. And man, I don't even remember what all the comics were. I own them somewhere. They're in my dad's attic somewhere. Go ahead. I'm sure you remember more.
Well, so like I didn't have any of the 90s Valiant comics, but Jeff, do you know about the whole sort of like return of Valiant from the like maybe 10
they
years ago.
They relaunched the whole line. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
Well, these two guys, I'm trying to remember Dinesh's last name because I hung out with him once before. But basically these two guys who were just big fans of Valiant for like ever since they were kids, they basically bought the company. They like put together like a proposal and bought the company, and their whole plan for like, and this is again, this is only in the past decade, their publishing plan was to kind of treat it like comic book Moneyball, which was basically to get the, not the A-list like writers and artists, but like the really solid people who weren't the big names, but could like just make good comics. And they kind of like rebooted this whole comic book universe. I should say, I've read very few of these. I'm not well versed in Valiant comics, but I know people who work at the company, and I think their whole model for how they approached it was really interesting, and they built this really cohesive comic book universe that also like doesn't have quite the baggage of Marvel and DC because they have like 60 years of continuity. Right. And but yeah, so I'm like aware of a lot of Valiant comics, but I have read very
few. I've read zero of that relaunch. I read a bunch of this 90s stuff, Ninjak and like I said, Exo Manowar and Bloodshot.
Eternal Warrior and stuff like that, Quantum and Woody.
But that was all like early 90s when I was just reading everything and buying everything and thinking that comic books were going to, you know, go up in value. but yeah, it's interesting from a potential cinematic universe perspective, kind of what Patrick was saying, which is nobody's walking into a movie theater going, I hope this stands up to the 40 years of Spider-Man comics I've been reading. You know, it's an interesting idea of being potentially able to have more of a clean slate and build something from zero, but I don't think that's going to happen now.
So this is a Sony film. Bloodshot's a Sony film, but then there was a movie called Harbinger, which was then acquired. The rights to that movie, which is also set in the same universe, was acquired by Paramount. So the idea that this was going to lead to this big cinematic universe, it was kind of like a, remember when Marvel like licensed out all their characters to like different studios, right? Like Fox got X-Men and Fantastic Four, and Sony got Spider-Man and so on. Like Valiant has kind of done that in a smaller way, in that Paramount now has apparently rights to non-Bloodshot characters, and so maybe there was,
That was an act of desperation for Marvel. That was an act of staving off bankruptcy for Marvel. That was not not a strategic move.
I will say, David, what you're saying, that thing that you're mentioning right now ties directly into sort of my whole take on this movie.
Bring it to us, Patrick. What are your thoughts on Bloodshot?
Okay, I mean, my super condensed version is I don't think it's a very good movie, but maybe because of the time we're living in, I still kind of had fun with it. But what I find interesting about this movie is, so as you're saying, you know, this is like a potential or would be cinematic universe starter that could, you know, that would love to compete with Marvel and DC in the same way that the Valiant comic universe was the same thing. And what this movie made me think of is Venom was sort of a similar situation, where it's not really an MCU movie. Mm-hmm. Sony had to kind of make their own thing and compete with, like, I guess, like the big kids. And both Bloodshot and Venom decided that the best way to compete with, like, the juggernauts of comic book movies right now is to make a movie that feels like a really generic film from, like, 20 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Yep. And
yes.
So it's like if Valiant is in terms of with their film licensing is where Marvel was like 15 years ago, they made a movie that feels like kind of like what Marvel movies were in the very early 2000s.
Right. Which is to say like schlocky, Venom was kinda, you know, movies that feel like they should go directed to Blu-ray or DVD or what have you.
Like that, right? Fantastic Four movie, maybe? Yeah.
Or just like, I mean, because I remember when I saw Venom and like, the interesting thing about Venom is only Tom Hardy's performance, because the rest of the movie, it's like they took the character and just dropped him into a generic sort of corporate villain plotline from any like just like run-of-the-mill action blockbuster from the early 2000s, and then that was it. And this kind of feels like the same thing. It feels so different than the approach to the Valiant comics, where they're like, let's just make like really, like, good, solid comics with, like, talented creators that don't have, like, the flash and big names of, like, Marvel and DC, but have better storytelling. And that doesn't seem like that was their approach here. They could have done something really unique to stand apart and instead just made something that feels like a throwback. I don't know.
All right. Well, it sounds like a real mixed bag there, Patrick. But Devinder Hardware, your thoughts on Bloodshot?
Yeah, I feel like throwback is a good way to put it, because this feels like a throwback to a lot of the terrible movies I sat through in the 90s. I hate this movie. I completely hate this movie. It is the worst sort of action movie, and I'm sure I've said this before plenty of times, but to me, the worst sort of like bad movies are the ones that aren't even fun to watch in a bad or campy way. Like, it's just, it's boring. It is a completely boring movie cemented by Diesel, who I love. I love the D's. We've talked about the D's quite a bit, and our love for the Fast and Furious franchise. I love what he's done with Riddick, even though those movies are kind of hit or miss sometimes. Like, I appreciate him as an action star and as somebody who's trying to build universes in a very dorky way. Like, we've talked about how Fast and Furious is just basically a comic book universe, you know? And this movie just does nothing for him. It's just completely empty is the thing. Like, this is an action movie that's trying to be smart and self-aware in a way, just be like, oh no, we're not the dumb action movie you initially thought we were because of a spoiler, you know, plot point. But still, it is still, even the point where it's making fun of bad action movies, it's still being a bad action movie. This movie is two Inception levels down of a bad action movie. You know, it is incoherent. I don't understand any of the action scenes. There's something that happens. This movie quick cuts so often for the most innocuous things. It is kind of hilarious. I just didn't find any of it interesting or thrilling. I don't know, like, the motivation for Diesel's character. Like, once he's, we'll talk about some of this stuff in spoilers, but I think motivation is all over the place. I don't understand the stakes of this movie sometimes. What is this organization he's working for? Who are they? What are they like? What are they doing in the grand scheme of things? And for some reason, a movie that's trying to be so big and comic booky feels incredibly small. This movie feels like it has five people in it, and that's all we see. Like, there are no other humans. This movie feels itself like a simulation of some kind, and we're just watching Vin Diesel and a couple, you know, actors bounce around stages. I don't know why Lamorin Morris is in this movie. An actor I really like with a British accent for some reason. Like, a lot of things are just inexplicable. I wish I had fun with this. It just felt so dull and so boring. Be more interesting. That's all. That's all you have to be.
Jeff Cannata, your thoughts on Bloodshot?
Well, Dave, I guess you could say my thoughts about Bloodshot are best summed up in the form of a limerick, but my limerick is a little spoilery.
Hmm.
And I'm going to say something that you will never hear me say, but I kind of think it's not a bad idea to say a tiny little spoilery thing before you hear this, before you see this movie, to hear sure. a bit of a spoiler. Now,
huh.
I totally huh. respect anybody who would not want to do that.
Huh.
But
huh.
Hmm. I'm going to say something here in the non-spoiler section. If you want to fast forward, 15 seconds, 30 seconds is most it will take to get through it. So I'm going to say something now, but I honestly think it's not a bad thing to hear if you're even considering watching this movie, especially after hearing what Devendra and Patrick said. And that is, the first half an hour of this movie isn't this movie. And I think that that's really pretty cool. Because
except it is a third of the movie. It is still what the movie is forcing us to watch. So, but go ahead, Jeff. Go.
Okay. It's going to be difficult for me to talk about why I really like this movie.
This is not some mind-blowing revelation. I do feel like
it's not a mind-blowing.
We could just say it. I mean, but
okay,
yeah.
Here's what I'm going to say. Here's what I'm going to say in the non-spoiler area. If this movie starred almost any other actor, it would. The script is clever and cool enough, and the direction and action is clever and cool enough, in my opinion, that it would not seem dumb. It would seem clever and smart. And if it was called The $6 Million Man instead of Bloodshot, but it was the exact same script, it would seem a lot cooler. It could be called The $6 Million Man and star, I don't know, anybody. Literally
Mark Wahlberg.
Anybody.
Mark Wahlberg.
Well, not anybody. Okay. Almost anybody. But some person who's not a big muscle-bound dude who can sort of doesn't have to be all Vin Diesel.
Isn't the character a big muscle-bound dude?
That's what I'm saying. It's not. If you don't worry about making it a Bloodshot movie.
I see.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Here's the thing. I kind of like all of the backflips this movie does to get to the visual of Bloodshot. If you want to see a fight scene in flour, in not in flowers, flour, the baking ingredient.
It's very confusing because, okay, so Bloodshot as a character in the comics, he just has like ash white skin,
yeah,
I guess. And the way this movie does this is to set a very boring set piece amidst flour.
I completely disagree that it was boring. Doing? I thought that scene was rad. I had a ton of fun with that scene. There are a motorcycle chase that's really cool. There's a the final action sequence I thought was really cool.
Let's get to spoilers soon. I'm like
I had a good time with those scenes. I think the reason that I think this movie is kind of making fun. I mean, we gotta get to spoilers to talk about it. But I honestly think that if it was called The $6 Million Man,
yeah,
and it was they cast John Krasinski. This is a really fun script and a really fun movie, and it would totally swerve a ton of people, and it would be – we would talk about it like we talk about – I'm not even going to say because it's a spoiler.
Okay,
but I had a lot of fun with this movie. I think it's great. I thought the first half an hour was bad too, and then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, it was supposed to be. And I get it. You're saying that you didn't like that, and you were mad that it forced you to go through that, but it was for a point, and I thought that was fun.
I'm not even mad that it forced me to go through something. It's more like I'm mad that you're thinking you're smart by pointing out things that are bad about what you just did and then proceeding to do the same dumb things that you were making fun of. That's what I'm mad at.
So, Jeff, you're not going to give us the limerick pre-spoilers then?
Yeah? I can. It's just a little spoiler.
No, we'll just...
We'll wait for it.
I'll just say, you know, I expected to hate this movie, but I think I'm kind of more on Jeff's side on this one. I mean, Vin Diesel, I think, is a really silly action hero. I just no longer really find him believable as an action hero.
He is teetering on Steven Seagal territory.
It is so true. You can't deliver lines. It's not.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's really unfortunate that he's the star of this, but yeah, I agree with you, Dave.
And that being said, he does seem like he bulked up a little bit for this. Like he looks like almost believably like what Bloodshot could be. The plot of this movie is absolutely ludicrous, but I think some of the action scenes, I agree with you, Devendra, it has been edited to shreds. But some of them are like, hey, that's actually like a kind of a cool moment that just happened just now in that action scene.
There are cool moments I see in a quarter of a second of something that gets quickly cut away. Like, I don't know if I give you credit for that. I want to at least let me see it. Let me see the thing.
Yeah. So there's a lot that's dumb in this movie, but I did kind of have some fun with it. So I would not pay $20 to own this movie forever, but
which we all do now. Thank you.
Maybe when it hits a streaming service or maybe when it, comes out for rental or something like that. You know, it might not be a bad, or maybe when you see it on TV. But anyway, I thought it was all right. Why don't we move to spoilers? Because we have a lot more to discuss here. So spoilers for Bloodshot starting right now.
Now you're looking for the secret.
You're going to see this coming.
No.
But you won't find it because, of course,
you're not going to see this coming.
You're not really looking.
I have been puzzling over how it works.
You don't really want to work it out.
Who's in the box?
I have been dying to tell you.
I want to tell you my secret.
You want to be fooled.
All right, Jeff, you want to take us into the spoiler section with your limerick here?
Sure. If you judge it, don't be so quick, because the second act pulls a neat trick. It's Total Recall meets Live, Die, Repeat, while masquerading as a bad flick.
How dare you? Two great movies?
I like that it is doing a bad action movie for a little while. And then
A lot of while. But okay.
It says, hey, we did a bad action movie to trick you. We did a bad action movie because that's what works for dumb oafs like this.
Exactly what every audience wants.
It's what I want. I don't give a shit about other audiences. It's what I liked. I like the fact the movie's saying Vin Diesel's a big dumb idiot.
Yeah, you could do that in 5 minutes.
This movie chose to do it in a half an hour, yeah. And I think
certainly a choice.
Okay, I feel your hate. I do. I recognize it. I'm saying that all of the bad action movie even the way it all plays out, the bad dialogue, all of that stuff was a cool, like, lull me into a – it's unfortunate because it does make you think this movie is awful. But then it becomes a pretty fun movie, and, you know, there's a lot of things I would change about it. I'm not saying this is a great movie. I had fun. I had a great time. Yeah. I thought
that key word is fun. And I wish I had fun too. Yeah, that's all.
Patrick Willems, let me ask you, how did the whole head fake work for you? You know, the first 20-30 minutes basically is revealed to be an illusion, like a memory that's been implanted into. First of all, I should also point out, there's a moment when it's revealed that, like, all the memories are implanted and, like, Guy Pearce is, you know, running his PS4 version of Dreams, you know, and, like, going through like, the memory and being like, maybe a little bit more blood spatter on the wall this time. You know, like, I'm like, who gives a shit about any of this? Like, why is he doing this at all? Anyway.
He's an artist.
So how did it work for you, Patrick?
I'm glad we have dived into this because this is what I was excited to talk about. So I think, like everybody, in the first 10 minutes or so, I was like, oh no, this, I just spent $20.
Yes. This looks like a Michael Bay light, disaster basically in 20 minutes. Yeah.
I had fun with, Toby Kebbell's intro in the meat locker dancing to Psycho Killer, as much as it's like, you know, the like, oh, quirky villain
because it's
dancing
Toby
to
Kebbell.
Pop music.
Yeah.
Right, it's like a cliche, but it's also fun. I enjoyed watching that. But then when you get to, like, you know, his wife being killed right away, I'm like, this is that really that kind of movie that we're gonna just, like, start it off with that, and then you get to that point where you learn what's actually going on, and I'm like, oh, this movie tricks you into thinking that it's worse than it is. I, like, sat up in my seat.
Well, what's cool is, and just to make it even clearer, is what's cool is that it goes, hey, we're a movie about this dude tracking down Toby Kebbell. We cast Toby Kebbell because he's a recognizable villain type star dude. You know, he's a.
I don't know about that. But
he's
okay.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. You can.
Hey, that's Dr. Doom you're
that's
talking
Dr.
about.
Doom. He is. That is the bad ape. In the other, the middle
Planet of the
Apes movie,
you're telling me you weren't
right?
surprised that he died so quickly. I'm saying that movie.
Actually, it was a cool moment. It was a cool moment when you see Toby Kebbell again, and his character is completely different than what you've seen before.
Yes.
And it's like, what's going on? What's going on?
And then he goes out.
What's
going on? It is clearly setting up a movie where the last moment of the movie is killing Toby Kebbell, and that happens 20 minutes in, and you go, huh, well, that's interesting. Huh. And that's the moment I sat out of my seat. Because I will also point out that Dave sent a text out saying, oh, the villain of this movie is called, Michael
Martin
Axe.
Martin Axe.
Martin Axe. And I was like, no, well, that's what's so cool is that that's what you're led to believe, that this is this villain of this movie. Listen. And we're going to take the rest of the movie to track him down. And then 20 minutes and he's dead and you go, oh, I give the movie credit.
I feel like that moment hit harder for you, Jeff, than certainly it did for me. I will say the best part of the fake out of this movie of the first couple of minutes is that it was basically color graded to be the orange blue poster color. So that was fun. It just looked like a Michael Bay movie. So you kind of knew what you were stepping
into. Scott, I would say it looked more like a Tony Scott movie, like a lot of greens.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Can I chime in here? Yes. Because this is what I really wanted to say. So I watched Bloodshot in the midst of watching a bunch of Tony Scott movies. Mm-hmm. And my main take on this whole movie is that with honestly, maybe even the same script, this would be a really good Tony Scott movie.
Yeah.
He would know exactly what to do with this, whether it's like you've got the sort of brooding male protagonist who has this like single-minded like quest for revenge, whether it's like Man on Fire or Tony Scott's movie Revenge, which I watched last night. You've got that sort of thing. You've got the sort of like, you know, like sci-fi, like the weird sci-fi aspect. It's kind of reminiscent of Deja Vu. Mm-hmm. And just like all of like the settings, the premises for scenes, this is the stuff Tony Scott would kill. And he seems like a bit of an influence, but And there will, but like, again, Devinder, you were mentioning that, you know, it's edited way too frenetically. And like, there will be like kind of a striking shot, but it'll be gone in a second.
Yeah.
And Tony Scott would know to actually like linger on these images and give them some actual like weight and power, mm-hmm. and like create some atmosphere. And my main thing about this movie is I just wish, I mean, I always wish Tony Scott was still alive,
but I wish
he could have made this movie, because I think he could have made it like really artful, mm-hmm. while still accomplishing the same goal.
What I love about Tony Scott is that he applied an artfulness and an energy to really schlocky like concepts. Like, that's the thing. Like, you look at something like Top Gun or even Days of Thunder, and even Man on Fire, which is a straight up like a typical revenge movie, but even when it has crazy editing like this, like, it captures mood and essence so well. Like, he handles Denzel so well. I want to talk about the flower power shootout, okay? And why I think that's where this entire movie fell apart for me, because that's post the twist, right? That is, well, no, it's not post the twist, but it is.
That's right before the twist.
But it is in the real world, right? Like, it is essentially what we're seeing is the world as it is. Some of it's being like the actual people are simulated for the D's, but beyond that, it's a real world. We enter that scene. He crashes into the convoy. He just shoots everybody in the most boring way. He gets shot. He plays dead. This is a super powered comic book hero whose main technique right now is playing possum. They're like, okay, I guess we killed this guy. They step out. No, they didn't kill him. He just gets back up and starts beating everybody up.
Whoa,
yeah,
gets back up and starts beating everybody up. They're in a tank of a car, this bulletproof car. He does this awesome thing where he draws a little happy face out of the flower that's Let me finish.
He just gets up.
Let me finish, please.
That's all he does.
Then he pulls a grenade and holds the person up to the window and stands there and holds the person. So the person explodes, shielding him a bit and blasting the window. That is cool, dude. That is cool. All the while, it is this incredible, like, slow-mo flower everywhere. I mean, I've never seen anything
like flower everywhere. Yeah.
It's also lit with flares.
There's blue and red and the blue-red.
Did he even get the, like, here's what I'm saying is why it's incoherent.
I'm not going to allow you to describe it as this banal, like, boring. He gets shot and he stands back up because it's not like that.
Jeff, you called out probably the one interesting moment of a very long shootout, but after they, like, knock him down, he does just get up.
What is the name of the flare that he puts on the front of the car so it disables it? Super cool and smart. I've never seen that happen.
It, like, melts through the hood.
It's a specific kind of thing. I can't remember what it's called.
Yeah.
But
Thermite. Let me just say
one thing. The most insidious part of this review is that I am being forced into a corner and not being able to say what I hate about this movie, which is a lot. But I have to defend it because it's not as bad as you guys seem to be making out. And in fact, could have been, and I agree, yeah, it would be great if Tony Scott directed it. It would be great if, I think it's actually a pretty smart concept, a pretty smart script, and it could have been a really great movie. It's not. But it's not a terrible movie. It is certainly better than Gemini Man, which you liked, Devendra. I will watch this
first of all, I don't like doing the comparison thing, by the way, because it takes you away from the movie and what we're talking about.
Oh,
I reviewed Gemini
like
Man.
Talking about it would be like if Tony Scott directed it.
I didn't do that.
We just talked about
not
Tony Scott movies for the last 5 minutes.
We did, but Jeff, what you're doing, you have time to talk about what you don't like about the movie, but you're spending time defending it here. What I am saying is, you could go listen to my Gemini Man review, and like, I defend that movie and why that movie is doing different things and what I like about it, even though it's schlocky. This movie is not doing anything. This movie is not, like, it is trying to be smart, but I feel like if this was a movie directed by, you know, the 21 Jump Street guys, you know, like Chris Lord and Phil Miller, they would kind of, they're smart enough, they've rebooted, you know, series enough to, like, know how to handle that sort of, like, interplay. Like, 21 Jump Street, nobody wanted that reboot, but they knew how to do it smart, do it well, and actually comment on bad action movies in a much smarter way than this thing. But here's the thing. Like, I'm just talking about that one shootout and how that one shootout is, it's boring and incoherent. Like, you bring up the one interesting thing of him holding up the guy with the grenade. Did that even blow apart the window?
Yes.
Because right after that, he unloads his guns into the backseat area. Toby Kebbell's still alive. I didn't know what's happening. We look back at Vin Diesel, and then he takes a shot, and then that final shot kills him. Like, it's not the action, the choreography, this, like, it is not telling me anything. It's not like painting a picture of what's happening in this action, other than him holding up a guy and blowing him up, you know, with the grenade, which, yeah, it looks cool. But I wish the rest of that scene, that's like 5% of a very long scene of Vin Diesel just going around and like punching dudes and shooting people in very boring ways. Like,
okay,
it's
let me just say what this action sequence is for anybody that hasn't seen this movie. First of all, it's the first time we see him do anything that is super powered in the movie. So when he gets shot and goes down, there is that thing that happens in movies where it's like, what is he capable of? What isn't he capable of? We kind of see it through the bad guy's eyes of like, check to see if there's anybody else here. There's this moment of it's in all red and there's this flower all in the air. It's atmospheric and kind of cool, in my opinion. Then he gets up and he puts the cooled grenade thing, the thermite on the hood of the car to disable it. Very cool. There's a moment where in slow motion, you see a bag of flour come out of the fog of nothing, hit a dude in the face in slow motion, and then he starts taking guys out in sort of 300 style ramp motion, knocking dudes into other dudes. There's more than one cool moment in that sequence, and to describe it as like he gets shot, he stands up, and then he punches dudes, I don't think is fair to the movie.
But that is what happens. Like, I do think you're hyping up like the slow motion and anything, but we can move on to other
scenes. He throws a bag of flour to take out a couple of guys.
Oh, man, he throws a bag of flour, Jeff.
All right.
That is,
we spent like 20 minutes talking about this one scene. Jeff, why don't we move on into some of the things you didn't like about this movie?
I wasn't saying the bag of flour thing. It's because it's different and unique. You're describing it like, oh, he just punches dudes. And I'm telling you, that's not accurate. Okay. So there's a lot of things not to like about this movie. I know. And you guys have covered that.
Even separate from that scene. And by the way, Jeff, I'm on your side about that scene. I actually thought it was kind of cool.
I think the motorcycle scene
actually,
is awesome.
Same here. I liked it too.
I think there's a motorcycle action scene where he's like on top of a guy and then a car hits him while he's like – It's super rad. And then the last sequence, I think, is really kind of, you know, a cool superhero multi-tiered sequence on a couple of external elevators. That's pretty nice with a guy with a exoskeleton on. I mean, I thought it was pretty fun. I am very disappointed that this movie didn't have the courage of its conviction to just have him die at the end. I thought that would have been really cool if he had just been like, everything you hear about him up to this point is that the reason they picked this dude is because he's willing to die for his convictions. Guy Pierce keeps saying over and over, look, it's amazing. He's like willing to completely die for what he believes, for revenge, right? And then he gets in that situation where he's like, you don't have any nanites in you anymore. You're screwed. And he's like, all you have is, you know, Gary, whatever his name is. and he's like, yeah, but that's enough. And he pulls the pin on the grenade, willing to sacrifice himself. I thought I would have given this movie so many props if they had just left it like, oh, maybe he's dead. But no, of course, we got to put him back together perfectly and have that stupid, like, Fast and the Furious ending, which is a total cop-out and lame and makes me like the movie less. But it could have been a really amazing ending. I thought it was a clever writing of the ending of like, he's just walking forward and saying, screw it. I will die to end you. But there's lots to not like. But I do think the movie is saying, look at how, it's talking about the era of Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone and saying that is completely outdated. And that's just, we can use that to manipulate people. You want to have a power fantasy? That's what Guy Pierce uses, is a fucking power fantasy to manipulate toxic masculinity dudes into doing stupid shit. And I thought that was kind of clever.
It is kind of clever, but at the same time, I mean, it worked, though, is the thing. Do you know what I mean? Like,
Yeah, the movie certainly wants to have its cake and eat it too.
Yeah, because it wasn't like Vin Diesel eventually realized, like, hey, you know what? I should stop murdering dudes for revenge because of this whatever. He realized he's being deceived.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
that is where I think one of the things I don't like about this movie is that I think the movie, I wish it had the courage of its convictions. I wish that it was not trying to set up a franchise of superhero movies and could have literally just cast a different actor who probably would have been more okay with not being the hero, you know, and just let it be what it kind of wanted to be. I think it would have been much better. And again, not a great movie. I'm not saying it's a great movie. I just don't think it's garbage.
Yeah, as bad as, yeah. You know what movie this reminded me of, actually, is Matrix Reloaded. A couple of scenes from this movie. There's this the motorcycle scene.
Yeah.
Patrick, I know
Matrix
Reloaded.
There's so much slander going on right now.
Well, it's just the motorcycle scene, it looks in concept and execution, very similar to the Matrix Reloaded motorcycle
scene. It looks very similar, but I mean,
it almost feels like a
callback to it.
I don't necessarily say that because some of the effects in Matrix Reloaded are pretty dated. Also, the final sequence when Vin Diesel and that other guy who I don't even know what his name is, they're fighting each other in the elevator shaft.
Yeah.
That looked like it was straight out of the Burly Brawl in Matrix Reloaded.
All the human CG in this movie is
pretty rough.
Also,
I do hate the way Hollywood visualizes nanites, man. I hate it. I hate it. And this movie is all nanites all the time. And there's a couple of moments that are super cool, but we have to be able to, as an imaginative industry, come up with a way to visualize nanites that just isn't so dumb.
So
you know what's really going to get your goat, Jeff? I like the nanites.
So Patrick, I think this is something that Jeff Cannata has been beating the drum on this podcast for a while. Is like the idea that, like, for instance, Iron Man movies got the visual effects got really crappy when they started using nanites, right? Before, it was very clearly a combination of Robert Downey Jr. or his stunt double wearing an actual suit augmented with some CG. I mean, if you see the behind the scenes, that's what it looks like.
Then
it's just like nanites. I mean, now it's just like, whatever. They don't need to, you know, it could be nothing physical.
Nobody needs suits.
Yeah,
nobody needs suits
at all. They just press a button and now they're surrounded by suits now.
The Iron Man nanotech suit is nowhere near as cool as like the original one that feels so tactile. Like when you see the robots like putting all the pieces
so
on,
better.
It's so much better. So I do have to say, sort of like jumping off of the, like talking about the nanites and also that, the reference to the Burly Brawl, totally ties into what I was saying about how this feels like a throwback to like early 2000s superhero movies because it's like the action is shot the same kind of way, especially that that elevator fight. But so I was looking up the resume of the director. This is his first film, but before this, like he was most of his body of work is directing cinematics for video games. And like he worked at Blur Studios, which is Tim Miller's like effects studio, you know, who like made Deadpool and stuff
very
like
well
that.
Regarded.
And Blur Studios has made like a lot of really cool stuff. And I was actually a bit surprised that the movie wasn't more stylish because coming from the world of like video game cinematic cutscenes, you know, that's where you have all, they have like the fanciest lighting. They'll have these like impossible camera moves with these like really long
shots. I feel
like
that last fight was kind of like that.
Yeah, that last fight feels like that was what it was.
It reminded me a lot of the new God of War from last year or 2 years ago.
Yep.
Yeah. It was a little bit like that. And there would be occasionally be those moments where you could sense that like, oh, this is why he decided to do this movie. Like, you know, the slow-mo speed ramping flower fight scene and stuff like that. But also the budget was only $45 million for this movie, which is low by the standards of these kinds
of movies.
Yeah,
I'm sure Vin got half that.
I think you could tell, like, this movie cast maybe, like, the cast list in IMDb is super short. It's like, they had to save on catering. Like, you know, you start to feel like how constrained this movie is. This director, by the way, did a pretty good episode of Love, Death, and Robots. He did the Sonny's Edge one. So that was a series I've talked about. That was the Fincher collaboration, I believe, of like weird futuristic stuff. It is funny coming from that, which I think was a cool look at like a futuristic Fight Club of like giant monsters, I think, to this, which doesn't have any of that creativity.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting. And like, I agree with what everyone has said about like, especially like everything that Jeff praised about it. I mostly agree with. I think there's a lot of cool ideas, and what it's aiming for is really interesting. And I've just been trying to figure out like what's a better way to execute it, because like, mm-hmm. for instance, they introduce you to like these the other enhanced people that they have at this organization. You know, the guy with like the robot legs, the guy with the robot eyes. Yeah. And then of course for like the final action scene, the robot legs guy puts on this like very anime looking like mech suit.
Yeah.
But I was wondering, like, do those people do missions?
that's because, what I'm saying. What is this organization? What do right, they like, do? Like, what's the point of any of this?
It seems when it's beginning, when they first wake him up, it totally seems like the way it's going is they're going to have a team, mm-hmm. and he'll be on this team, and they'll do missions together, and then and we'll see them in action before he inevitably has to fight them, but then they just really just seem to hang around doing like office work, and the whole business model is just like, oh, just make Vin Diesel get revenge.
Yeah, that's really it. It's one of the things that I think is really funny is like, it just seems like they haven't thought too much about these other characters and who they are and what they do. Like the guy who is blind has cameras on his chest.
Like clavicle, which is like,
it's on his chest. It's like on his chest. It's like, you think that guy may want cameras near his
eyes. Haven't you always wanted to look up people's noses?
Yeah, that's what he's used to. It's just things like that. I was like, I guess that's cool.
Here's the question. You know that question that's like, why don't they just make the entire plane out of the material that the black box is made out of?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, you can't do that because otherwise the plane wouldn't fly. But I think it's a useful question because why don't they just make all the other guys in this movie the same thing? Like, why don't they just make those people like they make Vin Diesel?
Well,
you know,
the storyline, the one bit of plot I like retained from this movie is that Vin Diesel is the first that they've managed to bring back in this way.
I can answer all these questions for you.
Yes,
I'm not, again, I'm defending
you are the compendium of knowledge.
I'm not defending a movie I don't love, but I will tell you that it seemed pretty clear to me that the idea is they are a company that is an offshoot of a much larger group of people that were inventing this thing. Guy Pearce decided, hey, I want it all for myself, and so I need to kill all of my collaborators. So what am I going to do? Well, I'm going to put this new tech that maybe these collaborators weren't 100% on board with, didn't think I could finish, thought it was too risky or too scary. I'm going to use it in this experimental thing with this dude who has nothing to live for. I'm going to put it in him and use him to go and kill all of them, so I have the sole ability to sell this tech, and no one will tell me that it's crazy or nuts or know anything about how I did it, or I'm the, you know, copyright holder, whatever, the patent holder.
I feel like you're filling in some blanks.
No, he was
very specific. I think this is in the movie. Yeah. I think this is in the movie.
And so he put together a team because they didn't know exactly how volatile or what it would do to this guy. He's got this team of other dudes that his co-collaborators all helped build, and they were doing this thing where they were kind of doing a benevolent thing for the world. Yes, it was militaristic, but it was actually helping these wounded warriors, you know, fixing them. They were making prosthetic arms and legs and all these things. And then they said, nope, we're not going to do the full body deal. And so this is the team that is specifically there to take down Vin Diesel if he goes rogue, which is why the leg guy goes, oh, isn't it awesome we finally get to use all this stuff? Because they've been sitting around not killing Vin Diesel when their entire purpose was to kill Vin Diesel should the need arise.
All right. Patrick Willems, what do you think of that? I mean, I think you did a pretty great job of summarizing it. Arguably a better job than the movie. Patrick Willems, what do you think of that? Are you satisfied now?
Sort of. I mean, I will agree. a lot of that is there in the movie. I think I was just thrown off by the fact that this seemed like a very stable organization, and I did not understand what else they did.
They were
did.
On the knife's edge of financial insolvency, I think, is what we're what Jeff
what
is saying.
What city are they in?
Yeah. I did we ever know?
Yeah.
Like, we know that he flies to, like, London and Budapest, but I never got a sense of, like, where their base was.
Here's what my fundamental problem with the movie is, though, Jeff, and maybe, I don't know if you have a comeback for this one, but I just think it's a bad idea to make somebody invincible and then make your entire business model, MO, modus operandi, tricking that person into murdering people in as violent a way as possible.
Well, yeah, these are villains.
Not
well, saying out loud.
Not expect yeah. that well, to backfire out loud, you by the way, horribly. You know what I mean?
They said out loud several times, like, man, revenge is a pretty great motivator. We should take note of this. This could be important for our future.
That's never
going
to blow back on us in any way.
Yeah.
Well, you know what also is dumb? Is to listen to three witches and think that you can get away from their curse and still, you know, advance on Dunkirk. It's like, I'm not, you know what I'm saying? I'm using Macbeth.
Yeah, no, what you're saying is this is the Macbeth of Vin Diesel.
Exactly. The Macbeth of Vin Diesel. I'm saying it is, that's what villains do. They do dumb shit that it is, you know, I'm not defending the movie. Maybe they could have better justified it, but it's like, for you to say like, hey, it's a bad idea to, you know, it's like, yeah, it's a bad idea to collect all the Infinity Stones into a gauntlet too. It's like, yeah.
But here's the difference, right? We talked about, and I forget where you stood on XXX3, Jeff, but I believe Dave and I praised that movie to high heaven.
A great film.
A great film. A modern classic. That movie is dumb as hell, knows what it is, and like really leans into that in a way. Like, I think that movie's enjoyable. The action is really fun and interesting. Like, that movie has so much going on. That is, you know, the last, that movie hit theaters right as Trump was being inaugurated. That's what I remember. That movie happened a decade ago, apparently. But you can have these slocky movies and have fun with it. And I think this movie just doesn't, it certainly doesn't have fun with it. It barely has a sense of humor aside from like, I guess that one Indian guy has a small penis. That's the joke.
Terrible.
In the movie.
I
don't know what else is going on.
I'm not
going
to defend any of that. It's terrible. There are things I hate about this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we've talked way more about this movie than it deserves, but
yes.
Guys, we haven't talked at all about Lamorne Morris's performance,
which I thought
was a highlight of the film.
I mentioned it. Yeah. And why does he have a British accent? I don't know.
But it's fun. It reminded me of Don Cheadle in the Ocean.
He seems to be the only person enjoying himself in this film.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And so that is
yes. Fun. Yeah. He's having fun. I think he's bringing a great energy to the movie. I wish there was more of him. I think maybe a better version of this could have just had him as part of the main team from the beginning.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
I thought he was cool.
He has the energy of like, I am a sitcom guy. And I'm in this big Vin Diesel action movie. I'm going to make the most of it. So he's hungry, and I can tell.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I will say I like the scene when Vin Diesel goes to the woman he thinks is his wife.
Yes, heartbreak. And, heartbreak emotion.
There was some like genuine like drama there. And I was glad to have it confirmed that they did not really kill off his wife. We got more of like a better sense of who that character is and more actual like emotion there than in the rest of
there
the movie.
Is this so that character is played by Tallulah Riley, who you might have also seen in Westworld. She's also Elon Musk's ex-wife, and I really thought that scene did a great job of conveying this sense of danger, you know, that she found herself in after, like, can you imagine if Vin Diesel showed up at your doorstep and thought he was your husband? Do you know what I mean? Like, you would feel like you were not in a great situation in that point. And there is this kind of, like, tension there of what is this man going to do, and is he, like, a danger to myself or others, right?
Yeah, it cuts to her feet, and she's just, like, backs up.
Yeah,
half a step.
I love the cut to her feet. Yeah. You know, that was a great cut. Yeah. So, yeah, great call out, Patrick. Anyway, all right. So I think we'll wrap it up there, but overall, a mixed bag. Jeff and I thought it was pretty fun. Maybe Patrick did a little bit. Devendra certainly did not. But you can now own Bloodshot for $20 if you choose.
We own it forever, all of us. Forever.
All of us. We're all united. We're Bloodshot brothers, guys. We're Bloodshot brothers.
Yep.
All right.
We'll never forget this one moment.
We'll always have Bloodshot. You can find more episodes of...
No, no, David, we will, because we bought it, and we own it
forever. He's right, David. He's right.
I've already forgotten it.
You can find more episodes of this podcast at slashfilmcast.com. Email us at slashfilmcast@gmail.com. Our spoiler bumper comes from filmmaker Kyle Hillinger. Our theme song comes from adamwarrock.com, and this episode was edited by Beatty Zhang. Stay tuned to hear what we'll be discussing next week. Until then... Patrick Willems, where can people find more of your work on the internet?
It is all over at youtube.com/Patrick H. Willems. There's long videos where I talk about movies.
Yeah. Recently did a video on The Mask of Zorro, which is a kick-ass movie, and a great video as well. And Patrick and I did a commentary on that video, which is itself a commentary on The Mask of Zorro, over at his secondary channel, Patrick Willems Presents. So be sure to check both of those videos out if you have a chance. Devendra Hardwar, how about you?
Oh, you can find me on Twitter at Devendra. I write about tech at Engadget.com, and I also co-host the Engadget podcast. I also did a lot of coverage around Half-Life Alyx this week, so go check out my review, my video review, and we talked about that on the podcast. That's an amazing movie. Really uses VR in interesting ways.
Devendra and I video can game, agree on that one, for sure. It's incredible.
Yes.
How about you, Jeff Cannata?
You can find me on Twitter at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. I do a video game podcast called DLC that you can find at 5by5.tv/DLC. In fact, I think Dave Chen's going to be our guest next week.
That is the case,
I also do a long-form Dungeons & Dragons show called The Dungeon Run, and we're doing new episodes. We figured out a way. The show has been... shot like a television show up to this point for the 39 episodes that we've done so far. But we're in a new paradigm now. So we're doing the show from home. The production team has done an incredible job of putting the show together. And we did our first episode of a new story using the same characters. It's kind of filling in backstory stuff. It went so great. Last night, two nights ago, we did it. It's on YouTube now if you want to check it out. It's a great jumping on point. If you're curious about the show, you don't have to worry about watching all 39 episodes to understand what's going on because it's brand new. Time travel is involved. It's really fun. So check that out. You can find it on YouTube by searching for The Dungeon Run. You can listen to it as an audio podcast by searching for The Dungeon Run wherever you get podcasts. Or you can listen to us live, watch us live, and actually influence the show Wednesday nights, 6 p.m. Pacific time. At caffeine.tv/thedungeonrun.
And check out the podcast I do called Culturally Relevant. You can find it at culturallyrelevantshow.com. It's interviews with filmmakers, artists, and writers, as well as reflections from me on what's happening in the world. Next week, we'll be reviewing Portrait of a Lady on Fire, which is available right now on Hulu as of today. So check it out on Hulu, the movie's Portrait of a Lady on Fire. It made both Devendra and I's top 10 lists of 2019. Patrick Willems, you seen Portrait of a Lady on Fire yet?
Yes. Yes, made my own top 10 list. Great. I mean, it's no Bloodshot, but
you really drew the short straw when it came to which slash filmcast episode to appear on, I think. You got the Bloodshot episode, not the Portrait of a Lady on Fire episode. So
that said, I mean... Portrait of a Lady on Fire is there's so much there, and there's so much to, like, I don't know if I feel qualified to really speak at length about that movie. I feel pretty qualified to talk
about
it. That
doesn't bode well for us.
Indeed. Well, we will try to make
good
it
luck,
work
guys.
Next week on the Slash Filmcast. Thanks for listening. We'll see you later.